Securing strategic investments in our community that serve a public purpose, enhance employment opportunities, and leverage capital and capacity to help small businesses and nonprofits thrive and succeed. This is the mission of the Community Investment Corporation. Now, probably more than ever in the history of Mrs. Green's world, and I do not say that lightly, and maybe even in the history of Tucson, our community needs the CIC. Stay here with me to hear why that is, why I am so passionate about their work, and why I personally wanted to get this show on the road, so to speak, so that we could start spreading the good word about some things that are going on in this crazy mixed up world. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson with Mrs. Green. Today, we're going to be having a conversation about community support for local business during COVID-19 and beyond. And we're having it with someone for whom I have the utmost respect and who I have to think is a pretty fun and intentionally human being. And I don't say that lightly either. I know this guy and he's the real deal. So please join me in welcoming Danny Nee. Danny has an extensive background working with community development and affordable housing and currently serves as the executive director of the Community Investment Corporation. Danny, a very warm welcome to you. And it's great to not only have you back, but to have you here given what's going on at this particular time in our country and more importantly in our community. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Gina. It's great to be back and to be talking with you. I really have always appreciated how well you connect with the community and get important information out there. So I'm really happy to be joining you during these unprecedented times right now.
You know, I want to start with a question about how you are. How's your family? How's your team doing? It seems to me kind of not okay to just go on with the show and start asking the questions. I want to know how you are because these are unprecedented times and you're a friend and we have mutual friends and I know some of your team. So how's it going over there? How's that for a big question?
Things are going okay. We moved to working remotely, I think ahead of some of the other groups. We have the capacity with laptops for every one of our staff members. So we were pretty early in adopting working remotely, and everybody has stayed safe and healthy. And thank goodness, my wife and I are safe and healthy as well. I've basically intruded. She works from home. She's a web developer, so I've intruded on her workspace. And
how's that going?
I might be the director when I'm at work, but at home, that's her workspace.
Oh my God.
With working out just fine. I do want to mention one thing since you asked. I have a mom with Alzheimer's and she is in a assisted living place, and I have now not seen her since March the 13th. And I think that is something that we're focused on things that are happening around us and don't always know what's happening even within families. And that's something I used to go and see her probably 3 to 4 times a week in mornings on the way to work. And I haven't seen her. And she doesn't totally understand what's going on at the moment. And so that's been really hard. I think that's been one of the toughest parts of this. But thanks so much for asking. I really hope that your family is doing well also.
You know, it matters more than anything. It's like, it's not just, hey, how you doing? It's like, how are you? How are you really? And thanks for sharing that story. And there are so many of those painful stories. And just to be a little bit on the light side about your working home situation, I saw one of the funniest things that I just want to share, where there were 4 podcasters doing a Zoom call that was being broadcast live. And I've been making a lot of jokes about this with people about what are you wearing on the bottom and making people stand up, you know, kind of as a joke. Well, this guy had a really nice, he had a shirt and tie on. And he thought the cameras were off, and he got up and he had on these plaid boxers. The fellow broadcasters were cracking up. And there, so one of them called him on his cell and said, dude, you're still on the air and you're in your underwear. And he ran out of the room. So every one of us is looking for those light moments as well, because working at home, you know, Kelly, our executive show producer and one of my dear friends, Mort works for Raytheon, and he's working at home. So now she has the two kids homeschooling Mrs. Green's World and Mortimer. So there are interesting times everywhere, I think.
It's funny. My wife, she calls it chipmunking, like Alvin and the Chipmunks, because they don't, you know, the cartoons don't have pants. So she calls it chipmunking when you're wearing something nicer up top and something not as nice down below. So I definitely understand.
Hey. Guilty is charged, and it just, we need to inject a little humor. And, you know, the thing about your mom, this afternoon, one of my goals, and I'm saying it out loud, is to write cards for people in assisted living. I mean, I can't imagine. And I am such a social person, I can't imagine. So I'm going to try and write a bunch of those. And it's weird. I started doing it. Hi, I don't know you. I don't know your name. But I can put my heart into it and say that I don't know you, but I'm thinking of you and sending you love and sorry about this crazy mixed up world, so we can all do something. So anyway, on with the show. You and I can go off on these tangents, and it's kind of fun, and I think it's what people enjoy about our show. It's like there's not any hard and fast rules. There's just meaningful conversation, and that was. So let's do a pre-COVID-19 conversation, because I think it's important that you give us a bit of a background on the mission of Community Investment Corporation and some examples of the kind of work you were doing before the world literally turned upside down. What is CIC all about?
Well, what we're all about is really trying to include everybody in our community in the economy. And, you know, obviously with the goal of prosperity for all residents of Pima County and Southern Arizona. The way we do that is we try to provide access to resources that people may not otherwise have. And we do it through three basic areas. One is through small business and entrepreneurship support. One is through homeownership, access to homeownership for first-time home buyers and low to moderate income home buyers. And then the other piece is through education, and we do work supporting schools and being able to build their the buildings that they need. And we're also now involved in something we call family engagement, where we're trying to reach out and raise up parent voice in the conversation about education here in Arizona. So those are our three main program areas. And we've been working to do more in the small business arena. We were doing more even before COVID-19. And then once the outbreak hit, it has just been eight to tenfold increase in inquiries and looking for support and help. And that's what we've been trying to respond to since about March, you know, mid-March.
And Danny, for the education part, you're trying to educate parents so that they raise their voices for quality education for their kids?
Yeah, we're trying to do is we're actually at the very beginning part where we're just basically asking them, you know, how do you find the school that you enroll in? What's that process like for you? What are the resources like? And what we want to do is try to bring some of those surveys and their needs and opinions and provide it basically free to anybody. And so the idea is it's what we call basically a demand side approach. And I think people do understand sometimes in the conversation that happens, let's say around education, it can really come down to what I think is kind of a false binary where it's, you know, traditional public schools versus charter schools, you know, versus school choice or whatever it is. And there are sort of vested interests that are doing, sort of have the loudest voices in those spaces. And what we think is we need to inject parent voice and we have no agenda. We're just saying, hey, let's ask the questions and let's then make that information available so that, you know, the schools and school districts and charter schools, whoever it is, they can use that information as they will, but hopefully to react to and meet the needs of the parents.
And having been involved in social services intimately, in doing home-based services, social services, working with at-risk children and families, it's hard for some people to believe that parents not only don't think they have a voice, they're afraid to raise it. And I saw it over and over again saying, you have rights, you have rights. You can go to the principal, you can go to the teacher, you can go to the head of the department. And it's hard when you live in I would call it a privileged world where your parents were educated and then you got educated and you, I've always had a voice and I'll be honest about that. I've always had a voice because that's the way my parents raised me because they always had a voice. So working with families to help them find theirs was truly one of my most rewarding. It was, well, I did it for 35 years. So obviously I thought it was pretty cool. It's like you have to set the stage for a lot of people who are listening who may not realize that there are people who just don't think they have a voice. And if they find it, we all win. That's always been my point. 'Cause raising the bar for everyone raises the bar for everyone. So I don't think I knew that about you, and I apologize, and I'm just now a bigger fan. So let's switch now to life before COVID-19 to life now with COVID-19. And I couldn't even get my head around it prepping for this show. And I really want you to get down in the weeds, tell us what it's really like, because you're an alternative funder for small businesses. The core, the very heart and soul of our country, small businesses. So how have you been responding? What's it been like? You know, give us a sense for how your world went from 0 to 900 miles per hour in about a 24-hour period. I don't even think that's an exaggeration.
It probably isn't, and the issue has been also as COVID-19 has been progressing, it's also been changing, and the responses have been changing, and we've had to be responsive to those changes. So it's just we have been going probably 100 miles an hour here for the last 6 weeks or so. I can't say enough about our staff. Basically, what we saw really early on as, we first were talking about gatherings of, a certain amount, restrictions on those, we saw sort of what was coming. And so we got on producing a loan product right out of the gate where we're doing $10,000 microloans at 3% interest with just interest-only payments for 6 months. So the idea is that they would be really affordable for a business who suddenly had lost a lot of their revenue. And we came out with that on March 19th, and then just about 10 days a little bit, 11 days later, basically the shelter-in-place orders came out on March 30th from Governor Ducey. And that really kicked things into a whole gear. And the way that I put it, I certainly hope people are not cynical about the way I say this, because I truly believe it. In many ways, small businesses they're sacrificing their livelihoods for our safety. And I appreciate that. I really do. They have had to shut down they can't make the money that they've made. These are dreams of theirs, often to own a business. And they've been, asked and ordered to shut down. Many started doing it voluntarily early on. But regardless of how it came about, these are people that are sacrificing financially in an incredible way. And I know that has continued, obviously, now to pick up. And we see with the unemployment rolls, record unemployment coming upon us, that so many people are suffering. What people don't always understand, I think about small businesses, and there can be different definitions of it. The one that the government is using now is 500 employees or below. And that's probably a bigger small business than we really look at. We're more, you know, helping with groups that are, you know, under 50 employees, under 25 employees. But small businesses employ, you know, roughly half of the population. And they tend to be more fragile than some of the larger corporations. I think also, which Gina, you know, somebody who's been around Tucson for as long as you have and knows as many people as you do and, you know, has a true love for Tucson, I think we can hopefully agree that what makes Tucson special is our small businesses. It's our local business owners. You know, it's La Cocina, it's Five Points Market, it's, you know, Antigone Books, it's all the places. I mean, people can name 100 of these small businesses that really make, that enhance their lives and make Tucson what it is. And we risk losing, one estimate is that if the restrictions that are needed to fight COVID-19 last for 3 months, we could lose 50% of our small businesses nationwide. And I just can't imagine Tucson where one out of every two local small businesses is gone.
I can't either. And I mean, it does get me choked up, and a lot more people should be getting choked up. And you know, you're right. You and I, we're grassroots people. Who do I hang out with? You know, I mean, you want to go where someone knows your name and they're always glad you came. You know how many times I've used that line for restaurants where I go? And in one fell swoop, you know, after the stay-at-home orders came out, I said to our bookkeeper, don't bill any of our restaurant clients, which is close to a third of our businesses, because I eat out a lot and I meet people in restaurants a lot, and I believe in the locally owned restaurant. And, you know, take Renee's Organic Oven. She was one of the first. She closed like 2 weeks before, and the day after, she and I had a very painful, tearful conversation about what it was for her to make that decision, knowing that two of her employees are married with small children. But she wanted them to live. So she took that move, which takes a whole hell of a lot of courage, and she did it. And there are a million of those stories. And to your point, I'm a small business owner. And when you do that, you risk everything. You put your name on the loan. You put your name on the paychecks. You back the business if you get, you know, you use your whatever collateral you have to get loans. And it's, you know, I was saying to my husband before we got on air, Disneyland is staying closed till January of 2021 at this point. And kids can go to Disneyland again, but the thousands of workers that will not have jobs, hopefully, will have unemployment. It's just one of those things that just keeps going and going and going. So I have another question. Given what the workload has been for your staff, how are you helping to support them? I mean, this conversation is going everywhere because I start thinking about it. The pressure on them went from what to what? Like, what did a daily or a monthly workload look like 2 months ago to what it looks like now?
Well, I think a good measurement is, so we're a relatively small nonprofit. We're nimble, and we weren't set up to sort of meet the entire financing need of small businesses in Tucson. We try to kind of fill in the gaps and find places where access to capital is needed.
Right.
But with that in mind, so our general loan portfolio, it's around $4 million that we have loaned out to small businesses. And it fluctuates between, you know, say 42 and 48 loans. And from basically March 27th, and our prediction is with what we have in our pipeline, we will hit May 8th. So just over a month, we'll have done 20 loans.
You are kidding me. Oh my gosh.
another three or four on some other lending platforms. We have community-backed lending platforms, which I'm sure we can talk about. So we're talking about helping, you know, and this is just actually getting money to people. Over 50% of what we normally have in our portfolio in an entire year is happening basically in one month. Gosh. And the need is, we're actually going to run out of our initial commitment. We think as of May 8th, we put $200,000 towards this. We are now looking to add some more to that. And we're also looking, doing some different kind of fundraising to continue to be able to help, because this, the need is not over. And one of the things I just, Gina, I know that you know that I'm kind of a stats guy at times. I know that's not everybody's cup of tea, but I try to come, you know, prepared when we talk. Of the initial $350 billion in funding that was given out as the stimulus, and people call it the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP loans, that was basically went to 1.6 million U.S. businesses. And that is just 5% of the country's total number of businesses when it ran out. So, and when the last time that I saw the statistics, and it is a little bit over a week ago, but only 3/4 of the businesses in the United Small Businesses had applied for that support, and only 20% had been accepted and received any of the funding at that point. So while there's a lot in the media, and it is very, very, it's a very good thing that, in my opinion, that we are supporting our small businesses, that, you know, our national legislature is supporting small businesses with this stimulus. People have to understand that even though people announce the big numbers, until the money gets in the hands of the business owners, they're still struggling to figure out how to keep people employed, and if they can, and how to keep their doors open. And so the need is still incredibly great right now. Even when you hear those big numbers thrown out, I hope people understand, like, all that money is not in the hands of small businesses. Again, only 5% of our in all the businesses in the country were basically accepted to get funding, and that leaves a huge gap for so many others. So that is why, you know, we've seen so many new inquiries into our loan product. We've also partnered with a wonderful grassroots group called Tucson Helping Tucson, who's doing not only trying to help get the word out and fundraise for our local small businesses, but we're actually trying to do just a little bit of keeping people employed, musicians who had gigs canceled and some of the production crews. And we're doing a live stream every Saturday from 7 o'clock to 9 p.m.
And I've been listening, and I didn't do it this Saturday. It was supposed to be on it. And we took a spur of the moment trip to Greer. So I hope they invite me back. I love my buddies there at Brink. They're so creative and so giving. And, you know, Josh and his team are just doing everything they can to keep this going. So we can talk a little bit more about that, because it is helping. And I hope there'll be a guest spot left for Mrs. Green one of the Saturday nights. But it's just another reflection on, I want to use a word that's not a word, but the specialness of Tucson as a community and how we're always looking for solutions. I mean, we have a mutual friend that I know you admire and respect as much as I do, Mike Peel, and he hasn't skipped a beat. I mean, he's sheltering at home, but his computer is probably going to burn up because he's just not stopping. It's very heartwarming to see how it's coming. But I want to go back to, can you explain to us what a community-backed loan means? How is the community part of that conversation?
Sure. So we have two options for community-backed loans. And what they are is they're crowdfunded loans. And we're trying to use the term community-backed because we think it really gets more at what's happening. So in a crisis like this, There are so many different needs across the service spectrum. And you know that I used to work with Michael McDonald at Habitat for Humanity, and he's now the head of the Community Food Bank. And he and I were talking, and I've repeated this a few different times because, I've just always thought so much of Michael. And, you know, he said, we're in a community and basic needs service crisis, and it's also an economic disaster, and we need to address both. And what winds up happening, and he understands, he wants to support small businesses in part because he wants to keep people off of the lines for needing food at the food bank.
Right.
He understands it's not, you know, the idea, they're doing amazing work right now. It's incredible what they're up to. But, you know, the idea is to hopefully not have people need their services. So he is somebody who's also looking to address the sort of economy and economic piece. And what also winds up happening is, if I'm a donor, in which I do donate to nonprofits, and I have my choice between donating to the food bank or donating to a small business, sometimes people may not, if they have limited resources, they may say, well, the highest need is for somebody like the food bank. So what a community-backed loan is we have a couple of platforms through partnerships where a community member can actually invest directly in a loan to a business, and they can actually loan their money to a business. And you can loan as little as $25 on one of the platforms, which is through a partnership that we have with the Tucson Kiva Hub. And if people aren't familiar with Kiva,
love,
you should look
Kiva.
At some.
Love, I was going to say, yeah. Is this a Kiva model? Because I put money in Kiva 10 years ago and it's still there, just keeps paying it forward.
Well, Gina, you're gonna have to keep appraised of the Tucson businesses going up there. So through Growth Partners Arizona, Leslie Pintor, we
love
are,
her too.
Yep, we're supporting their work, and we're helping to source some of the loans for Kiva and through Growth Partners Arizona. Basically, people, and we've already done two, which is really cool. A place called Creative Kind, and another one called Just Churros. Basically what it is that you loan, again, as little as $25. And by grouping all these loans on this platform, they have nearly 2 million lenders, and those are just individual people worldwide. They were able to get their loan, the money that they needed, and it was up to $15,000 is what you can get. They were able to do it basically in 2 days when they got up on the site.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And Danny, is that going to be, we'll put links to everything when we post the show, but can someone do that directly through the CIC website, or do you have to go to Growth Partners?
It's Growth Partners is the one that we go through. We have a staff person who works on it for us, but we they can get to it from our website.
Okay.
But Growth Partners, it's basically where you'll get routed to. And again, they're just wonderful partners. And,
so
and again, what we is just we want to activate the community in support of businesses, and we understand that people may feel weird about donating to a business, you know, something that's trying to make a profit. That's, you know, that may not be something that everybody's comfortable with. So this is another way. And you actually get paid back, which I think is really, it's a cool idea. And we have another partnership through WeFunder. And those are also loans right now. They normally do crowdfunded equity. And I know we've talked about that previously, but during this time, they're also offering a COVID-19 relief loan. And these are a little bit higher amounts. They're a little bit bigger than what you see on Kiva. So depending on what a business's need is, we have found different tools that we're hoping to be able to help the business no matter what their situation is. And there are a lot of great places doing great work. Business Development Finance Corporation just got $1 million through the mayor's resiliency fund to help businesses within the city limits. There are just like so many places that are trying to help. And sometimes the number of resources can actually be a little bit overwhelming. And we're trying to help people with that as well. But we want businesses to find the help that they need. And we don't have a one-size-fits-all approach to that.
And in some cases, I know this because I am a small business and I did apply for the loan. And every 3 days I get an email from Wells Fargo that says blah, 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 and nothing. And we're really a small business. I mean, there are seven of us. So it's very interesting. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. But all of it really matters. I mean, I would be devastated if our important work goes away because of something like this. And you know me, Danny, that's not going to happen. It's like, I'm not even putting it out there. I am a fighter. And I went in the closet the other day, literally, and I said, just put your big girl panties on and plow through this, Murph. You have what it takes. And I do. And that's what it's going to take. But for small businesses in retail, in the food sector, all of those things, a little bit can just make the difference between success or failure. And you and I know that. So let's segue to all of those people that are calling, such a demand in the a need in the community. Are your staff having to become like part-time social workers? Are they having to do more than just process a loan, like mentoring? And what's that effort all about? I can't imagine that in that arena, it's business as usual.
It isn't. It is different. When people call now, it isn't just about the money. It's also people, I think, have a little bit of, I don't know, like, not everybody, but some people have a kind of deer in the headlights. There's so much information coming at them. There's so much uncertainty. And there is a part about just, you know, being able to say like, hey, we're going to help you work through this. You know, somebody just say, it's going to be all right. And not in a Pollyanna type of way, but to say, you know, we can really look at this and try to help you solve your problems. And whereas we didn't do as much kind of mentoring previously, we recently, and this is just by happenstance, we had hired somebody in our chief strategy officer, Aaron Eden, who's been kind of in the startup community here in Tucson for a very, very long time. And he has also helped us kind of ramp up some one-on-one mentoring with volunteer mentors, you know, business leaders who are helping individual businesses. We're actually helping the Fourth Avenue, the historic Fourth Avenue Coalition and their merchants. And part of the work we're doing is not just, hey, you know, here's a $10,000 loan, good luck. It's like, okay, well, how do we respond to this? How business is different right now. And, you know, there's a lot of predictions that business won't be business as usual on the other side of this, whether that means you know, people working remotely more often or even just being more prepared for some kind of interruption like this. I think you're going to see some of the pivoting that people do during this time is going to stick. And so we're actually trying to help people figure out, and it's hard work because it takes one-on-one mentorship to do that, to figure out how it is they're going to not only, you know, we'll start with not only survive, but we'd like people to even be able to thrive, you know, through on the other side of this and to be able to bounce back. I know SBDC, the Small Business Development Center, Ellen Curtin, they're going to be doing some webinars on resiliency and focusing on, okay, now, you know, now that you've been closed for a little bit of time, how do you start back up? You know, what's different? What needs to happen? So we're really looking forward to those resources as well. But yes,
and being a part of the solution, that's what you're all about.
Yes. trying to be about
in a very different landscape. And I really didn't mean to interrupt, but I just think about all that you just mentioned in this one conversation is so reflective of the reason why I love where I live. And I write that a lot. I love where I live because there's so much willingness on the part of people that love living here and that care about our community and that have thrived because of it, that are saying, okay, how can we help? Even people that are in very dangerous positions or vulnerable positions themselves, it's like they're stepping up. It's just so much goodness out there. And that's part of why I was so excited to do this show, because you're helping. Let's just talk another minute or so briefly about how Tucson Helping Tucson came about and how is it helping?
So Tom Heath, he's a Nova home loan, he's right. A mortgage
guy. Another rock star in the local arena.
You know, he's sort of a downtown guy and it's just really a good guy. He basically, what happened is he called some of us, he called Local First, he called Brink, he called the Tucson Metro Chamber, all these sort of different people to get together and say, can we do something? And the idea originally was to have an event, a 3-day sort of live stream event where we could put musicians to work, put production people to work and pay them, and then also raise money for what we wanted to raise money for is an ongoing emergency fund. What we're creating through it is a revolving loan fund. It is not easy to raise money for a fund at the same time that you're trying to get the money out. And so we thought, you know, we'll do this one time, but maybe we can create something that's out into the future. And what we call, you know, our sort of tagline is pay it back to pay it forward. So getting people to basically donate money to 0% loans. They're what are called non-recourse loans. And the idea is, you know, we're not going to hound the businesses we give them to pay us back. We're going to say, when you're ready to pay us back, can you pay us back as a proportion of your revenue? And by paying it back, know that you're putting money into a fund that's going to help other businesses in need. And so that pay it back to pay it forward model has sort of been embraced by Tucson Helping Tucson. The issue that happened was the stay-at-home orders sort of scrapped the ability to do this this 3-day event, right, where there were people in the same place.
Right.
And so, yeah, so we've gone to the THT TV, and that's every Saturday, 7 to 9, Tucson Helping Tucson. And the number of, you know, we have artists, we have comedians, and it's meant to be lighthearted at the same time that we're trying to fundraise. And there's been some fantastic acts on there, Sophia Rankin and the Whiskey Treats and Sean Louis. And there's just been some wonderful musical acts, some sketch comedy.
I know.
Our host.
Turn it on without turning on the TV. That's what you should turn this on. I agree with you. And chances are you know some of the people there, and it feels good. It's a really feel-good experience on a Saturday night.
It is, and that's, it's meant to be that, while also getting across the message that that our small businesses need you, and that again, that Tucson isn't going to be the same without those small businesses. And it's the people that have come and donated their time to this, you know, Amber Smith at the Tucson Metro Chamber, who's so busy, you know, Carrie Sylvan, who's just been a longtime philanthropist and incredible, is helping out. Brink Rue Events is helping us with all those things. It's really a grassroots effort. And I have to say, and, you know, you said before, Gina, those are where my roots are. I've been in nonprofit for 20 years, and being a part of something that is from the community up instead of, you know, top down, has really been amazing and eye-opening. And we at CIC, who are the beneficiary of the money, we are the ones who are basically, the money that's raised, we're getting it out and into the hands of businesses. We are just, we're humbled and really honored to be a part of it.
And I love the whole idea. And to me, in these times when people can do a little bit, because the most philanthropy in this country comes from the middle class. That was the biggest shock when I got into the nonprofit arena. Yes, there are the Bill Gateses of the world, but most of the money, the bulk of it, comes from small donations from middle class people. So that's the message I want to give out there, is that $25 helps, $30 helps, $5 helps. And the thing that matters to me so much, Danny, is that you know where the money's going, how it's being curated. I want to know that if I'm giving a donation, it's going to get to the people that need it most. Like for me, our family made a commitment to pick one thing a week to do what we can, because we are definitely in that middle class range. I want to grow up and be a philanthropist. But, you know, aside from ordering a locally owned, you know, from a locally owned restaurant once a week, I called my friend Elizabeth at Youth on Their Own and I said, how is it over there? Well, you can imagine for Yodo, with kids that are the disenfranchised of the disenfranchised. So, you know, each week it feels like a really good thing to do. And this is Tucson Helping Tucson is a place where it can have such a ripple effect. That's the way I feel about this effort. So keep on keeping on, my friend. And you and I knew we were not going to adhere to any timeline, because once we get going, it turns into the 2-hour lunch. But I do want to ask you a challenging question that you might not even have the answer to. And you know, I don't ever put a guest on the spot. But given that you are a numbers guy, you are a community service guy, you have a finger on the pulse of what's happening, and I don't, that's not a cliche. What is your sense for the future? What does the economic road ahead look like for small businesses? I mean, I don't know if you can answer that, but is there... do you have hope in your heart? A little bit of hope, a lot of hope. What do you see from what's going on right now?
I do have hope. And the reason I have hope in part, even with who we're dealing with the small businesses, Gina, is that these are very entrepreneurial people. You know this yourself, as you said, you're a small business owner. These are incredibly innovative and adaptive people. And I think businesses are going to adapt. I do think that we need to be, I know that people are anxious to get back to work. And I know there'll be, you know, coming up here, there's going to be some work around how do we stay safe while still trying to open up the economy. And obviously it's a hotbed issue and those types of things. But regardless of how that happens, I do think that we need to be ready for a longer term recovery.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to be back to business as usual. I just have hope, because I do think that if we can look and at what's happening and support one another through this, and support the sort of innovation that's happening and get used to the new normal a little bit, I think we are going to be okay on the other side. I do question, honestly, just the idea of, in some ways, how fragile our economy is. And, you know, people I'm sure could debate that, but the idea that, you know, if in our individual households, you know, we're always told to have, like, if you can, you know, 3 months of emergency money on hand, or 6 months.
Right.
And we know a lot of the country isn't able to do that. But it is a little bit scary when, you know, when we look around and our economy can barely take 3 weeks of not being in, 3 weeks of being out of service before a lot of really bad things happen with unemployment and those types of things. So I also just wonder what's going to happen on the other side of this. Does this change how we look at how interconnected we are, how much we need each other, not, you know, both socially and financially and economically, and whether we may change our approach, you know, nationally in this conversation to make sure that we can stay healthy through these times, again, both physically healthy and also economically healthy.
And what a note on which to end. I'm serious, Danny. It was like a really good thing for me personally to do this show today, because I need help. I need hope. And I have great days, and I have days when I think, where is this all going to end? And I can't see my granddaughter, and the clock is ticking. And then I go back to what makes us us. And we're fighters. We're fighters in all the good sense of that. And I cannot see the American spirit dying ever. and I hope that I never do. So that's what you touched in me. And I will say to everyone, the important work that they're doing needs your support. We'll put the links on how to support their work on the website. And if you have anything to spare, this puts money in circulation, and the small business you save may be the one that you absolutely love and don't want to live without. And now a few last words from me, of course. I love getting the last words. And in this case, I can say they are quite personal. From the moment that Mike Peel from Local First told me about and then introduced me to Danny Nee and the important work of the CIC, I only wanted to know more. I only wanted to help spread the word from a very personal and professional point of view, because to me, this organization is all about what's right and good in the world. And I am getting emotional. From where I sit, they are true champions of the little guy or the little gal, the really small businesses, not businesses with hundreds of employees and locations, but small businesses where every single penny counts. They show up. They stand up for what's good and what's right about strong, sustainable communities. They walk the walk, and more importantly, they make good things happen. I have no doubt that when the COVID-19 dust settles, and we have even a tiny sense of what the new normal is in our world, the Community Investment Corporation will be there doing the right thing, the good thing, for all those whose lives they can touch, and in ways that are for the greater good of our community and, in turn, our world. So, Danny Nee, as my mother would say, put that in your pipe and smoke it, because that came from in my heart. It just flowed out of me. And thanks for showing up in my world. Thanks for leading the journey you're on, leading your team. Keep in touch. Let us know how we can help. And please express our gratitude from our team to your team, because we really do need you and them more than ever. And as always, my final thanks goes to all of our wonderful, amazing listeners, because without you, there would be no us. So thank you, Danny Nee, and I will stay in touch, and I hope that you will do the same.
Thanks, Gina, and please stay healthy and safe and keep up the amazing work that you're doing as well.
You too, my friend. The world actually does need us all right now. All the good guys, keep healthy.